Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game, like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way, with stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
I think the haircut is one of the most relaxing things there
is. Oh, that, you can talk during a haircut.
Yeah, no, not a big talking just, haircut guy.
You can just kind of sit there and vegetate, and it's a wonderful... Vegetate.
But I will tell you this. If he's cutting my hair and halfway done, and they tell him he got to stop, oh, he finishing my head. I'm not finna walk out with a half. No, I'm not doing that.
I've been going to the same person for 17 years.
Well, that makes it a little different.
So it's a lot different. It's like having a catch up with your friend.
Have you gotten the same haircut?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, basically.
Boy, what's that? Some kind of weave or something?
It is my natural hair. I have been growing it since birth.
What kind of chemical you got in there?
I have put no chemicals. Only juices and berries.
That ain't nothing but ultra firm. Tell me how you want me to cut this.
My buddy has gone to the same barber for, I don't know, 45, 50 years, and he gets the regular boy's haircut. And he's gotten that since he was like 9 years old.
There's something very...
Is that hilarious?
Very comforting about that.
Would you be willing to cut your hair?
Oh, yes, but it's usually better if someone else does it.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I got a haircut this morning.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Good morning, Mr. David. Condolences on the loss of Indiana's championship.
Morning, Molly. Happy Monday. Yeah, tough night for the Pacers. Great night for Oklahoma City. They definitely were the better team. Tyrese Haliburton, that was hard to watch.
Wow.
But I think when all is said and done, this was OKC's year, and it was historic. It was emphatic. And like many basketball forecasters predicted, the thunder rolled.
Rolling thunder. I like it. Yeah, I don't know that they would have, though. I'm not second-guessing anything, but the fact that they got blown out in the fashion which they did last week, and then you get to a Game 7, and I believe Haliburton, when he blew out his Achilles, and it was an awful thing to see, I believe they were up. They were leading, and he had hit a couple threes and had 9 points or something in the first quarter.
They were feeling it. They were definitely feeling
didn't
it.
Didn't they feel like
they were rising it? To the yeah. occasion? I yeah. still think that we'll never know.
No,
and
we'll
it's
never
the
know.
Unanswerable no. question.
Yeah.
But I don't think that there's an asterisk attached to this
no,
title.
Oh, God, no.
And I think Oklahoma City, when you see how they were able to take advantage of his absence, certainly. But then, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did what they were waiting for him to do when he took over. He did that throughout the postseason at most stretches. There were times when people expected him to do more, but that's a deep team, the position to have a run of success now that could keep them atop the Western Conference. And in the East, it's really up for grabs when you consider Halliburton is now out for a calendar year, like all of next season.
Yes.
Jason Tatum out in Boston.
Yes.
You look at the unrest in Milwaukee with Giannis and the noise there. This is an Eastern Conference that you wish that the Bulls were in a better position to take advantage of these kinds of things.
Totally agree. Because even in Milwaukee, you know, you got a major injury there too, which and then you Durant signed in Houston. It's just really
interesting. Had he gone to the Heat, that would have been interesting.
See, yeah,
so the Heat and the Rockets were the finalists for Kevin Durant. He ends up going to Houston in a trade that should have been announced any other time but on the day of Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That was ridiculous. Yeah. But Durant staying in the West, though, is good news for every team in the East that has designs on contending. And, you know, one of those teams maybe down in Orlando. They make the trade for Bane. They've got to feel like they're in a good spot. There are other teams that will be ready to, you know, regroup and look at this absence at the top, because the Pacers are going to take a step back without Halliburton.
No shadow of a doubt. That's really going to hurt them. But, you know, it'll be very interesting to see what goes on draft night, if there's more movement as a result of this, if there is a trade out there for anybody, or multiple trades, or how that
you don't plays typically
out.
See executives or teams ever acknowledge being more aggressive or trying to take advantage of something like this. And you wonder if the injury will spur the Bulls to do anything that maybe they wouldn't have ordinarily. But it's fun to consider, because you'd like them to be in an aggressive mindset going into the draft. And you know, you look at Oklahoma City and you realize there are some local connections. It's interesting. Obviously, Alex Caruso celebrating a legitimate championship, as he pointed out.
Yeah,
nothing about a bubble taint to this one. Billy Donovan left there in the season after they traded for SGA, and he comes to Chicago. And then Josh Giddey comes here, and without him, now they win. And that was a team that a year ago felt like they needed to make a move to get over the top. They made the right one.
Well, I mean, what a great trade that was that they made. Sam Presti, and you'll see him flexing again on draft night, because he has acquired every draft pick known to man. He's got two firsts, two seconds in this draft. It'll just be interesting when it's his turn to hear all the accolades. But I, you know, they deserved it. They won the championship. You thought they were going to win it. They had 60 wins during the season. I just think it's tough because, man, I thought the Pacers really, you know, try hard, work hard, great team, as opposed to a group that
Pacers were a better story.
They were a great story.
They were a better story. People kind of got behind and started to pull for, and you see T.J. McConnell, a guy a lot of people could relate to. And after they did what they did in Indianapolis for Game 6, you felt like that was going to be maybe the impetus, that was going to be the championship nobody could quite explain, because they weren't more talented than OKC. They, at times, were better coached, and Rick Carlisle, you have a lot of faith in him, but that was just when Halliburton went down. They just did not have anything to combat that loss. And
right.
I'm not sure many teams, how they would respond to losing the best overall player.
Yeah, it's very difficult. And
T.J. McConnell was crying, and I understand that. I mean, but it's like he's 33 years old, and he's a veteran, and Halliburton is the heart and soul of that team, and I give him a lot of credit. He was hanging around on crutches after the game, greeting players as they walked into the locker room. That's a gutsy guy.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. He's a tough kid. I was very curious to come in this morning and determine whether I felt any sense of Cubs panic from our little panel here.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they've been, they lost a series that arguably they should have won. Listen, when the wind's blowing out like that, there's going to be a lot of home runs, and there were a lot of home runs. But, you know, this is so much in Jed's hands at this point. And I know that we got good news with Shota Imanaga coming back, and it feels like, boy, you know, let's hope he's on his game. Let's hope he's at his best, because you're going to need that. But there's work to be done here. No question of a doubt.
Well, it was a very, I don't say humbling weekend, but certainly brought you back to earth a little bit. The Mariners are a good team, and Cal Raleigh is on a historic pace as a catcher. They've got some real good bats in that lineup, and Dan Wilson has done a nice job, local guy. We talked to him on Barrington's Pride Joy on Saturday morning. He was very excited about this season, and we did ask him about winning the or coming in third in the World Series.
Yeah, isn't that great? Little League World Series.
But the Cub bullpen was due for one of these weekends. They had been so good for so long, you figured that this was inevitable. But they've got some decisions to make now. They're going to be interesting to see how they handle the Shota return and how they maybe deal with a little bit of relative adversity. Losing 3 out of 4 in this Cubs season so far qualifies as a crisis.
Well, I think it's the fact that Milwaukee is somehow hanging around, right? I think that the Cubs seemed like they were doing so well and had all this breathing room, and then you wake up this morning and they're only 3.5 games ahead of the Brewers and 4.5 ahead of the Cardinals, and you're heading to St. Louis. So, yeah.
It's a big series. Big series down there. Pause. You like that. It's weird that it's the first time they're playing them on June 23rd.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Yeah, June 23rd.
Yep.
And Milwaukee got a boost. You know, when they traded Aaron Civale, that was almost like got a lot of attention. It stirred some things up in the clubhouse. Hey, you don't want to take a demotion? We'll trade you. That gets everybody's attention, I think.
Yes, I think
it reinforces
you're right.
How Pat Murphy is somebody you don't want to mess around with.
Right.
And then they elevate the right guy. Jacob Mizorowski is
Holy
a phenom.
Yep.
He is this year's Paul Skeens. And if that should be that should get every Cubs fan fan's attention.
Yep.
Because they aren't going anywhere. When you have Peralta, who's going to be good,
he's
always
good, always,
and you've got Mizorowski clocking 24 pitches over 100, this kid can throw it, and they're not going away.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. And, you know, again, I think that it does come down to solving some issues. And, you know, the scary element of it is that the separation you hope for before the trade deadline hasn't really arrived yet. And there are teams that are still thinking they might have a shot in the wild card, as opposed to, okay, it's not our year. We got to, you know, regroup and prepare for the future. So when you're dealing with that, that may make people hesitant about entering the fray with the trades. And there have been people moved, don't get me wrong, and we know that and we're talking about it, but it's kind of not the – it's not at this point the way you hope it will be in another month.
Well, I think the draft being July 13th complicates things for some teams, because some teams may put all of their focus into the draft because they're so bad and they want to – put so much on this particular season. You wonder if the Marlins fall in that category. You don't know about other teams, how they treat the draft. Whereas you would think that an executive should be able to balance both interests equally. But I don't know that. And I think Jed Hoyer alluded to that, because you think, well, there's so much focus in the front office on scouting potential draft picks that a lot of these baseball scouts looking at other players on other teams, like, say, if the Cubs were interested in Ryan McMahon still, the third baseman for the Rockies.
Yeah.
How much of their intel and how much of their focus is on scouting people they might take in the second or third round, or who might they take in the first, and versus, I think the organization is probably big enough to do both, but that has been offered as a reason why you may see a delay in moves and why you might not see the secondary or the second component to the big blockbuster trade that we saw a couple weeks ago, and why baseball is a little bit more dormant before the trade deadline.
But he's a guy who's on the market. That is a team that is, you know, has secured their position at the bottom of the standings, and I think they'll be trading.
Well,
and
answer me this.
There are like 6 teams that fall into that category.
This is something to get into later,
not
too.
Not 12.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a big difference, though.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Do we have a third base problem again if you're the Cubs. I know the bullpen issue is, but Brujan played there way too
frequently.
I wondered, and then you look at Shaw's stats over the last week, and you think, where's the confidence level? Where's his confidence level? Is it starting to wane after we thought everything was fine?
He has played well enough defensively that you don't feel like you have to respond. But I think that if you could get a third baseman, if you could get a hitter who could play some third base, that might be something you would look at and might be something that you could add to.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I also feel like I had mentally eliminated that as a priority.
Yeah, and it's not a priority. Pitching, starting pitching in particular, is the priority. All mm-hmm. of a sudden, you know, the pumpkins have turned back into pumpkins. They're no longer, you can no longer ride in a beautiful carriage, so you got to be careful. I don't know that we haven't seen the end of Colin Ray. No offense to anybody, but it feels like that's the guy. But there
was a very good run.
You could argue there are three pitches you could afford to replace, and that's maybe harsh, but that's the reality of their situation.
Well, you're talking about Horton, you're talking about Brown, and you're talking about Ray. So you got three guys who I don't know that I would want to replace.
I'm not
Horton necessarily. Ben Brown's a big start for him tonight.
Yeah,
I think that's why he's looking at it, and he's got to look at it as every pitching outing is like a referendum on his status in the rotation. Yes or no? Check a box.
Yeah, I don't know that Horton is the guy you want to replace, but I do believe that you know, when you are aware of the innings and all the rest of it, there's just a natural kind of concern that kicks in eventually. I think you kind of wish that somehow Shota was coming back with someone else. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true, and it's still early, and I think there's plenty of time to try to sort that out and see what Jed is up to, and so that's going to be the fun and a big series down in St. Louis. But how about the White Sox?
How about Mr. David and the White Sox? That was one of the true joys to see you playing the role of Ozzy on the postgame show over the weekend.
Well, that was talking about a bullpen crisis. They had to go deep into the bullpen over CHSN. And I found out that they were in need of a right-hander.
You
about
did
noon.
Very well.
That about noon.
Great. It was really
so Ozzy
fun.
Was off.
Yeah.
And had some scheduling issues. And then, yeah, called in there, worked with Chuck, did the pre and post game.
It was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was great.
It was a lot of fun.
It was great to see you do it. It was really good. It was another Sox loss. And then they won yesterday.
Yeah,
and then they
I jinxed
won
them.
A series in
they
Toronto.
Won two out of three.
They won everything but your.
I know. Yeah. And they were didn't. And they had okay. met. Here's how they did on Saturday. They had two hits. So which of those hits was my favorite?
Yeah, we were in my household. We were like, oh, that's Sammy Sosa. That guy's the bad luck charm.
I know. I think that is.
They should never let him back
and
in.
I know. There was a prop bet before the game and the pregame shows whether or not to take Lenin Sosa to double. And I said, well, it's the weekend of Sosa's in Chicago, so of course. And then I think I gave him the whammy. I put the whammy on him. So, no, the Sox were not very compelling on Saturday. Aaron Civale got a lot of credit for going seven innings, but he gave up four runs.
The guy saved the bullpen. It was a big move.
We're going to have to revisit this at some point. This is a larger baseball conversation, though, because what's becoming a pet peeve of mine, and I don't want it to be, but like yesterday, Colin Ray got credit from Craig Council postgame for getting some outs and eating some innings.
Yeah.
Aaron Civale goes seven on Saturday, and the tone of his postgame conversation was, boy, that was great. He gave us seven. He ate some innings. He saved the bullpen, and I get all that. But I'm like, what about the four innings he gave up by the second inning?
Well,
he put you in a hole.
I think that you also want to remind people that he can eat innings and he can go out there and give you a serviceable performance, and you should trade for him.
I don't think so. See, nothing about that outing said trade for me. Nothing. The fact that you want somebody to eat innings, okay. If you're in a pennant race, you're going to need more than eating innings. You're going to be mowing down batters and hitters.
It's a good option.
I get it.
For teams that won't be trading, there's one guy that might be available. That's all I'm saying.
I know. Well,
change your mindset.
I'll tell you, people. This weekend, though, did introduce to the rest of the teams in the league guys on the White Sox who might be able to help, you wonder. Okay, I'll grant you Savali. What about Adrian Hauser?
He was great.
Yes.
He was, and he won.
That dad strength.
Or he lasted. They didn't
yes.
win. So how about they had a comeback win? We don't talk about that enough. They were 0-38
you know, nobody's
after
talking
the
about
seventh inning.
The White Sox coming back after seven. Yes, they did
were,
that.
They went 1-94 a year ago. Was it 1-94? I mean.
They were 0-38.
They were 0-38 this year
yeah,
after seven.
Remarkable.
And they finally won a game.
Found a way. So Adrian Hauser did his job. Andrew Benintendi, if he keeps hitting, he's going to garner some interest. You never know.
Sadly, there is a contract with that.
But if the Sox are willing to eat half.
Who are we talking about?
I know. Depending on what your mission is. I know you've noticed this. We talked about it last week. They're getting people. This roster velocity thing. They are bringing people up. They're playing people. They're giving open auditions to MLB level. They might be willing to move a guy under those circumstances.
There are 10 rookies on their roster right now. That's pretty.
Just saying.
How about Wickelman Gonzalez coming up? Do you now remember him?
I do remember.
That's nasty. First big league strikeout for Wickelman Gonzalez as he points to the sky. Well done. Three up, three down.
Absolutely nasty stuff right here by Gonzalez. Three up, three down, and his first strikeout to boot. Welcome to the big leagues.
Welcome to Chicago.
The next inning didn't go as well.
No, but he did have – he is here, and he's contributing. And now that trade already has three guys contributing at the major league level and Brady Montgomery seemingly on the way in the minors.
He had like a three-hit game yesterday down in the minors.
By the way, John Triffin's voice, did you see what he did this weekend?
He went out on the
CN Tower.
Yeah. I haven't done
that,
but I've been right below that.
He followed through with that. They went out there yesterday. Brooke Fletcher set him up on Saturday. They went out and they bought a ticket for him.
Yeah.
And he followed through, good to his credit.
Was there disappointment?
In?
That he made it.
No.
It's a joke.
No.
It was a joke.
That's one of those things where we've all been there before, where you say something on the air and you're like, well, I dare you. Oh, okay. Well, then they followed through and they got him a ticket and he showed up and good sport about it. And
are you afraid of heights?
No.
Yeah. I mean,
I haven't had a
not
bad
to
experience
my knowledge.
Like that. Yeah,
yeah,
not to my knowledge.
But I've never walked out on the sea and that is
it was something
I've been
else
up there.
It was great. It was a great content. It was great for the show.
Yeah.
The pregame show on Sunday was very good. I saw the replay. I was not there, but didn't have to work on Sunday.
That's good.
Ozzy was back.
Finally
thank
got
God.
A day off.
Ozzy,
we had a very long conversation in my house because Ozzy, there's like a red light under the table. And it looked as if he had red socks on, but the more you looked at it, he actually had no socks on.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult one to determine whether there were socks or not.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know that red light you're speaking
crazy.
Of.
But we actually spoke of it. Like we actually spent, we had everybody in the house looking, oh no,
that's good to know.
No, that he's wearing socks. No, he's not wearing socks.
I'll alert
no,
the crew.
It was hilarious.
Can I mention one thing?
Please.
Yesterday, this was kind of a funny moment. So I'll make it quick. I was down in Lafayette yesterday.
Uh-huh.
Nice ceremony. You know, we talked last week. I went into the Indiana Football Hall of Fame. It was a really nice ceremony. Really the good thing. And had a lot of people there that were recognized and walked in, though. And were in the banquet room at Purdue. The Purdue Memorial Union. And somebody comes up to me. And I was walking in with my mom. My mom came from North Judson, and he's holding a bottle of A&W root beer.
Oh, that's hysterical.
And he comes up to me, and he said, he's got a name tag on, because we all got name tags on. And it was Terry, Terry Acri, I believe, is from Lafayette, told me how much he listens, how much he's always listened, back to the Tom Scher days. He's a scorehead, Don Lafayette. He wanted to come to the event. He heard us talking about our favorite pops last week.
And he bought you
and
an
he
A&W
bought me an A&W root beer.
That's awesome.
My mom's standing there listening, like, what? Why is he holding an A&W root beer? And then we took a picture.
Oh, that's hysterical.
But I have no way of getting it to him.
That is
He said, can
funny.
You take a picture? Took a picture of me and Terry holding an A&W. And so, nice to meet you, Terry. Thank you for listening. I ran into some other really good listeners that are outside. You wouldn't be surprised. You know how far the reach of the score can be, but there's a lot of good people down in Central Indiana that are scoreheads.
Wow, that's great. Well, Terry, thanks for listening. Yeah. Text in, and we'll get you that photo.
We'll get you that photo. Yeah. Because it was one of the more unusual photos I've ever taken.
That's pretty funny.
On a Sunday morning, drinking some A&W. Nothing better than that.
So it was like he brought you an A&W. You popped it open and drank it?
No, I did not.
Oh, I was going to say.
No, I did not.
You saved it.
I saved it. I did save it.
That's pretty fun.
You know, I'm not a big pop guy, but I think if the guy went to that...
To those lengths.
You got, yeah. You say thank you and...
I don't even know what you would, if you wanted to... Throw in a nice cocktail mix. How would you spice up?
No, there's not vodka A&W. If you really just needed it, but no, I don't think you'd do that.
No, I'm saying I don't think it would go with vodka.
I don't think it would.
I don't know what it would go with. That's my point.
You know who else I saw? I want to tell you. Do you remember Clayton Richard?
Sure.
Clayton Richard was a lefty for the Sox.
Yeah, I remember.
Lefty for the Cubs. He was the guy that got DFA'd when they traded for Aroldis Chapman.
Big guy. Yeah.
He is now down at Lafayette coaching, I think, Lafayette Jefferson High School.
Oh, wow.
And he was at the event as part of the National Football Foundation. He was there shaking hands and taking pictures. A lot of scholar athletes were also honored during a really nice, well-done ceremony. And Clayton Richard, I had remembered him because he was a good guy to be in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And he remembered me, and we had a good chat. And he's also good friends with Chris Getz. They went to Michigan together. They were teammates together. And he had a lot of nice things also to say about Will Venable, also his teammate in San Diego.
Oh, that's
He's
wild.
Excited about the White Sox. He knows it will take some time. But a guy like that, he's only 41 years old, so he's a contemporary of Getz and Will Venable. And he likes what he's seeing.
Well, I mean.
He looks like he's still throw too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He looks like he could still do it. I said, you look like you could still give him an inning or two. He's like, it's not my arm, it's my knee.
Oh, it's not right. Yeah. That's funny. That's what happens as you age as an athlete. That's great stuff. We've got all the stories of the weekend. We're going to be tearing them apart in the pick six. We'll do that next. Mullion Hall on the score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Are you concerned about the Cubs' 10-9 record in June, which already matches their loss total of any month this season with 10 games left in June? Can you believe the Brewers are now just 3.5 back, the Cardinals 4.5 back, and how important is this four-game set in St. Louis starting tonight?
Yeah, you know, it's important. They're all important, for gosh sake. I mean, of course, it's crucial, but I think that it was, you know, as we talked about in the first segment, there are so many teams that still believe they have a chance and still believe they're within shouting distance that's – you just want a team to have a bad week. And then, how many games did the Brewers pick up? Like three games in something like 6 days or something? It's just weird how, different teams can get hot and different teams get cold. The Cubs are still well ahead. They still have a good thing going. I don't think it's time to panic. The wind was blowing out. How many home runs were there in that series? 21 home runs in that series.
The Cubs hit 11.
And they hit the majority of them. It's crazy. And you would think that would be enough. They were also the better team in that series. It was a pity that they didn't do better. But I don't think there's any need to panic. I think that this is a big series because you haven't played the Cardinals and they are a traditional rival, and it would be great if you could win the series, but more likely you just have to split it. You just got to keep taking days off the calendar, preferably winning series. But I don't think it's time to panic. But they're getting an upgrade, and they need more of an upgrade.
Well, it's the biggest game of the season up to this point on the calendar. Craig was very weird, I felt, about that. Also odd. Like, why did they continue to pitch to Cal Raleigh? Are you trying to make him want to come to Chicago or something? I mean, I get it. But, pitch to everybody else but him. I don't know that the series would have been different, but it wouldn't have been quite as bad. So, yeah, I'm getting nervous. I am in a bit of a panic. I am not sure I can trust this Cubs team. Why is it still so close? And you should be happy. They're in first. We thought they'd be in first place all season. And every time they've had an opportunity to put the foot on the throat, as some would say, they have not done that. But now you do again. You have four games head-to-head with the Cardinals on the road. The mood should be elevated because Shota is with the team in St. Louis, and this is your opportunity. So, I'm jacked. You got three 6:40 starts followed by Thursday, an afternoon affair, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I think this is good to remind people right now, this morning on June 23rd, the Cubs are still on pace to win 97 games. And it hasn't been nice the last week or so where they lost three of the last four. And it was hard to watch over the weekend. Cal Raleigh's on an MVP pace. He is their version of the guy who will finish second to Ohtani. He definitely is having that kind of a year. It's historic what he's doing. And I know you don't want to pitch to him, but he was hitting everything remotely close. You can't get him out right now.
Oh, you just give him the four fingers, David.
Yeah,
you don't even try that pitching around him type of
possibly.
Thing. You just put him on base.
That might be coming for him as much as he's hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But I do believe this was inevitable. There's going to be a stretch like this where the Cubs are not having the kind of month they did in May, where they are maybe a tad bit over 500. That's why you enjoyed the cushion they created when they were over 16 games over. You look around baseball and you have perspective. The Yankees lost six in a row recently.
Yep.
There are good teams that go through tough patches. The Dodgers have done that as well. The Cubs are still atop the division. That's not good enough in October, but we're not in October. It's a very long season. And these struggles with the bullpen that was lights out for the month prior to this weekend, and the fifth starter spot, which I know now is going to be coming to a head, you kind of were waiting for this to happen. And now that it's happened, I don't want to overreact because I think this is still a very good team on pace to have a really special season.
Wow, that's a good question.
Voice John Heyman, he's with you guys at 8:25. Craig Counsell confirms Shota Imanaga will start next in St. Louis, but vague about which pitcher and where he would fit into the rotation. What's the right move, and what will the Cubs do?
I think the right move now, because of all of the factors involved, would be to take Colin Ray, your most versatile veteran and the most pliable pitcher of the three that you're considering moving. You've got Cade Horton, you've got Ben Brown, you've got Colin Ray. You're probably considering one of those three moving out of the rotation and into a bullpen role. We can all pretty much agree on that. Unless Matt Boyd, after Saturday's scare, or after Friday's scare, is worse than we thought, because that was really something you didn't want to see. Oh my gosh, great catch though, great reaction. But I think I might take the safest route, which is to keep Ben Brown, provided he doesn't get rocked tonight. Now, if he gets rocked tonight, this conversation shifts tomorrow. That's how tenuous it is, I believe. But I would probably hope that Ben Brown can continue to go out there, be your starter, because psychologically that might be best for him. Cade Horton, be your starter. Give him what you can. Take Colin Ray. You're the swing guy. Shota, go be the ace. Ray, play the role we brought you here to play. And the young guys, be young and upcoming, you know, future stalwarts, and be the guys every fifth day that you're capable of having a lights out effort.
I agree, and I'll put a little bit more on it. It's got to be Colin Ray, because I think he's the one that can accept it best, and he's the one that can manage it best. The other problem would be is if you did put Horton or Brown in the bullpen, let's say, all of a sudden now, if somebody in the quote-unquote regular five-man rotation went down, you have some issues now with depth as far as trying to get a guy ramp back up to be the starter, because only right now you have basically Jordan Wicks and nobody else in the minor leagues as a starter, you know, ready to be, you know, go five plus innings now. So if you monkey around with that and you get like 2 weeks where Ben Brown or Cade, you know, or Horton were out of the starting rotation, I think it'd be very hard to get them back into the starting rotation. So I think Colin Ray is the answer. Plus, he's susceptible to the long ball.
Yeah, I think the answer is Colin Ray because he's most likely to be able to handle it more than anything else. It's not that the young guys can't deal with disappointment. It's just that how many times do you see a guy go down and then feel rejected and struggle a little bit? So there is that element where if you're a professional and you've been through all the wars, I think you're less likely to, you're more likely to be able to compartmentalize it and still be able to pitch okay in the role that you perform, because you didn't really, you've done it before. Simple as that. So I think that's probably the right way to go. But if we're not paying attention to the fact that there are multiple options on this, then you're not going to get everything done correctly that you need to get done to fix the problem. So I think you have to be very sober in the way that you go about replacing people and anticipating whatever problems that there are. I think they need to get better, and I think they need to make more than one move, frankly. But they definitely need to get one significant move in order to be in competition for the rest of the way.
I love that question.
How about the White Sox winning a game yesterday and a series, but ending an 0-for-38 streak this year when trailing after seven innings? They were 1-95 in that stat a year ago. They also won their second road series and their first in Toronto since 2019. How do you explain that?
Boy, it's a difficult thing to explain. I think they're just not very good. They don't have a closer. Maybe they found their closer yesterday, right? Grant Taylor came in and got the last three outs, his first close in MLB. There's no way they moved him there and compared him to all these people without believing that he will one day take on that role. So it was interesting to see him be the guy that gets the call and to see him be the guy that gets the job done. This is a really bad organization that had an absolute, like, the worst team in modern baseball a year ago, and they lost 100 games. They're getting better. They're bringing up young guys. They still don't have the capability of getting a big hit when it matters. They still lose games by one run. You can still shut them down fairly handily. But I think that it's as simple as not being able to score runs and not being able to close a game out is the reason that they don't win one-run games, and they're 0-38 before yesterday and 1-95 a year ago. It's because they don't know how to win. They can't win. So it was a big deal that they figured out how to win a close game yesterday.
Well, I want to go on the positive side of this winning, the fact that they won a series, they won a road series, they broke the streak in Toronto, and I think a big part of it is Miguel Vargas. You got a guy over there. We talked earlier in the season, and we do this every year when the Cubs and the Sox get together, right? You go through the lineups and the rosters, and you say, okay, you know, what's the best guy in town at this? Like, Miguel Vargas is a guy that I think the Cubs would like to have on their team. He's a guy, and that's a guy I think they could build around. He's worked really hard. And the other thing is, how many young guys have now contributed? And you've got a Rule 5 guy that's probably your all-star. That's pretty good. I'm saying it just seems, we've talked about this before and laughed at it a little bit, but it seems they're definitely more competitive than they were last year. And it seems like this brain trust, if you will, the baseball operations staff is better than it was in the past. And they have a better eye and a better pulse on things. So I think there's some things here.
There are signs of
competence,
progress. Yeah, competence. Grant Taylor, consider this. He pitched the first three. He got the first three outs of the series in Toronto and the last three.
Mm.
Okay, and that was by design.
He was the opener.
He was the opener on Friday night, and he was the closer on Sunday. He's more likely to be the closer in the future, but he hadn't had that much experience, so they put him in some high-leverage situations. They gradually groom him for this role, and then they use him, and he struck out the final batter, and it was just like they planned. All is well in Toronto. That was a good series victory because the White Sox do have 10 victories, 10 rookies contributing to the victory. That's unorthodox, and they're doing things maybe in a different way because they have to. Their old way wasn't working, so they're throwing as much as they can at the Major League roster. It is trial and error. Jake Polish was promoted from where? Double A.
Yeah.
A guy, it's a great story. The White Sox are writing, you know, made-for-TV movies over there on the South Side. They're great stories about how they're ascending through the minors so quickly, skipping a step along the way. And, you know, maybe it'll work out. Maybe it won't. But I do think they are, I don't want to say conceding, but acknowledging the fact that they have to try things in a little different way. And this method is fascinating to follow. I think Miguel Vargas is a pretty good major league hitter. He may be their all-star. Shane Smith and Mike Vassell are good Rule 5 finds, and they're putting it all together. And what happened? Well, they were due for a rally after the seventh inning, so the 0-8-38 streak is no longer.
It's the right question, and I'm not sure yet.
What was your greatest takeaway from the NBA Finals? Were you more surprised by the results last night or what happened Friday night? And has the NBA altered by the turn of events? That was Thursday night. We talked about it a little bit on Friday.
Well, I think that when you see Oklahoma City do what they did in Game 7, the bigger story or surprise would have been them choking Game 7. and it would have been epic and historic. They won 68 games. They did exactly what they should have done in the NBA Finals. The fact that it took seven games, I think, was a bit of a surprise. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander reinforced why he was the most valuable player and why Oklahoma City has all of the depth, and this was by their design. They went out and they have drafted intelligently. They have traded intelligently. They have signed the right free agents. They have done everything right in terms of building a winner. And they look like they're positioned to be winning for a very long time. The biggest takeaway, we are in Chicago, so you look at it through the Bulls' prism, and you hope that there is something to see when you squint far enough. The only thing I see is an Eastern Conference that's up for grabs now because of the injury to Tyrese Halliburton, yep, because of the injury to Jason Tatum, because of the injury to Dame Lillard and the unrest surrounding Giannis.
Yep.
The Heat didn't get Kevin Durant. There are teams out there that wanted to get better and now are in sort of betwixt and between. So you have an opportunity in the Eastern Conference. If you know how to put a roster together to challenge, you should feel very good about yourself right now. The question in Chicago is, do you have the people that are able to put together a roster good enough to challenge? To be continued.
Yes, please shrink the timeline, as they like to say over on the West Side. Shrink the timeline. My biggest surprise, biggest takeaway is that it went seven games. I mean, I had this at a gentleman's sweep. Then the fans got me. The Pacer fans got me. I was all pro Pacers. I felt really good Thursday night coming in here Friday. Felt very, very good. And I even felt pretty good last night. It didn't feel like a game seven, though. I mean, that the ABC, the product, the broadcast is awful. I mean, they got to do something. It's a bad. It felt like a Tuesday night in March. There's just nothing. There's just no juice. There's no big game feel to it. I really think that and I know everybody's not a huge fan of it. I do think the TNT NBA countdown, like, that's going to make that whole product better. Those guys are going to be part of your NBA Finals, pregame, halftime. Who knows? Maybe even one of them will end up as the third person on the broadcast. Maybe that happens. Anyway, David, I think you make a fantastic point about the East. The Cavs are still there, but at the end of the day, they're the Cavs, right? I'm not saying the Bulls could win the East, but you could shrink the timeline and actually be in the real playoffs this time. If you make a couple of shrewd moves?
Maybe, but I don't know about the Bulls. But you mentioned the Cavs. The Cavs have a lot to prove after disappointing everybody in the playoffs.
Yeah, they calved it up. They calved.
I would say that it was really the problem that the Pacers had once they lost their point guard, right? And I know McConnell is a decent player and a good, but they started turning the ball over. They were, it's the same problem. You cannot give a team multiple chances. And it got easier. It just got a lot easier when you lost your ability to distribute the ball and you lost your ability to shoot the ball, his ability to shoot the ball. He knocked down a couple of threes earlier in that game. It was that you just can't give a team that is as good as Oklahoma City multiple chances. And that's kind of what they did, and it's why they lost Game 7, and that had to do with the injury. So I think from a Bulls perspective, this is what I loved. Scottie Pippen tweeted out, NBA Finals, .. Game 7, ? Never heard of it. Come on. So it took them seven games, which makes
that is one of the more remarkable details about the Bulls dynasty.
Yeah, never needed.
The fact that six titles, they never needed game seven.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So it was pretty, again, I don't know if I look at that as the greatest NBA. I agree with you, Dustin. The pregame, the postgame, the halftime, there are guys like they do a lot of yelling. They don't do a lot of communicating, and I didn't think it was very good. And I thought the game broadcast wasn't great either, frankly. And it did not have a big game.
Feel did not for feel it. Like a game no, seven any it stretch of the imagination.
Never. No.
And with that, I'll take your questions.
How big of a week is it for AK there? The transformational, traditional, transitional. What's the right word or words to describe the mode the Bulls with the 12th pick are in?
Yeah, the transitional, I think, is still what they're doing. I don't think they're going to have a transformational trade or they're going to be able to bring in something that changes them. The 12th overall pick should help, but I don't think it's going to be like they've got the second overall pick. It won't help as much as that would. Sadly, that is becoming traditional. So I think the Bulls are kind of, you know, they're going to be in the same mode they were a year ago. They're not going to be much different. They'll be entertaining. They'll play an entertaining style. But ultimately, I don't see them. It's a pity because when you get to a point where you're able to contend, unfortunately, there will be better teams and things will be a lot different. And this is the opportunity time in the Eastern Conference, and they don't have enough to take advantage of it.
Shrink the timeline.
Just shrink the timeline. Shrink it. Keep shrinking. Keep doing it. I really think, you know, the what they do at 12, what are they going to do with that 12th pick? You know, is the guy that we all want picked going to still be on the board at 12? And if he is there and they skip him, are they going to regret skipping him at 12? I think that's very, very interesting. I just, the Bulls can be so much fun. We all four of us fell into loving the Bulls trap. We all got to go to games. We all had different experiences. Billy was fantastic with us multiple times during the season. And so you got behind them, and they played a good, entertaining brand of basketball down the stretch. But then what typically happens happened. So it's frustrating.
It's a big week because you don't know what word applies, because I hope they're still discussing what they want to do and how they want this week to be and how it to go. Do they want it to be transitional? Well, that's easy because that's what they're used to. Transition. Well, you're transitioning to being a better, deeper roster and a different style of play, and transitioning to a 3-and-D roster, and let's get whoever that means at 12, and let's ignore the center who could be the guy that is the best player available, but he doesn't fit our system. Or they could be transformational and trade Kobe White, unload Vooch, find takers for both, change your roster, change your approach, change your trajectory. I don't know if you can get a star. I don't know who that would be. But I think these are kind of conversations. I hope the Bulls haven't settled for just being traditional. We're going to stand pat. We're going to pick 12th. We're going to make the best of it with the best player available. And we're going to try to make up some ground in the Eastern Conference, which is there for the taking. The Eastern Conference is there. Not that they're going to win it. Not that they're going to be even maybe top four. But they can make things more interesting by maybe altering the approach. And I think after what we have seen the last couple of years, it wouldn't be radical to try to alter the approach.
If you had to scratch out one word, which one would it be?
Oh, I probably transformational.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah.
Because I totally agree with you.
I think that it would take a different approach to the same set of circumstances, and I don't think they've changed the personnel. So they don't have fresh eyes necessarily, so they're going to look at things in the more traditional way, and they're going to try to take a transitional approach.
It's still a difficult question to answer.
Since we were last on, Johnny Toews signed a one-year, $2 million contract with his hometown team, the Jets, out in Winnipeg. What's realistic to expect from Toews? Anything surprise you about the news?
Maybe the money. Not as much as maybe I would have thought, but he has been out 2 years. So happy for Jonathan Toews. I read his posts on Instagram, and he tells a story about being in the upper deck and watching the Winnipeg Jets play when he was a kid, his introduction to hockey, how this fulfills a lifelong goal and dream. His career comes full circle, and I hope it finishes with him hoisting the Stanley Cup. I don't know that they will be. The Jets were the President's Trophy winners last year. They're a very good team. They were not a very good team in the playoffs. Maybe he can help put them over the top. Likely a third-line center. He probably will get some maybe moments, depending on how he comes back, maybe second line. He's going to be a contributor. His real impact will come in the dressing room. There were 26 players older than Jonathan Toews at 37 in the National Hockey League last year. This isn't that unusual to see a guy succeeding into his late 30s in the league. Let's hope he's the latest example of a guy can get something out of it.
Well, I'm happy that he's coming back. I don't think you want a guy like that to go out like that. That was going to be the last time he was on a set of skates playing in the NHL. And you like the story that he's going back home. Lots of times we speculated that Kaner was going to go back to Buffalo, right? That would be where. And he still has a couple years, and that still is a possibility, maybe. But good for Jonathan Toews. Got nothing bad to say about Jonathan Toews. I'm glad he's going to get back in because obviously he wants to come back in.
Yeah, I think it's great, and I think it's not about money. I don't think he's coming back for the money. I think he's earned good money in his career, and I think he wants to change the narrative of how his career ended, and it would be wonderful if there was a storybook ending. I am at an absolute loss as to how he's going to perform or how he will be used or how he will even play. He's been out a while, and it's unusual for someone to take a couple of years off at this stage in their career. It's all about health. I just hope he's healthy. I hope he's happy, and I hope this works out really well for the guy. I think we all have a real respect for what he did in Chicago and for how good he was as a player. And a leader more than anything else when he was here in town. Great, great dude. Hope he does well. No idea. I think it's really difficult to predict just because of the medical stuff involved in it.
Just don't know.
Yeah, you just don't.
He looks in shape. He looks healthy.
Himself. He looked almost sickly, David. You know what I mean? He kind of looked pale.
It's a little thin.
But now he looks healthier, and here's hoping. All right, we got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
What was your reaction to seeing Sammy Sosa back at Wrigley Field and the crowd reaction to him being there for the first time in 21 years? Did you feel he was bad luck? Do you want to see him more often?
This is my house. I always believe that it's going to happen, but wasn't the God time. The time was perfect. Now, I'm here again, and I will continue to be here.
Your reaction to Sammy Sosa over at Wrigley?
I thought it was all pretty cool. We were surprised on Friday morning when it happened at 7 o'clock. News broke that he was already here and was going to be part of the festivities. This was kind of the second phase of the return, or maybe it's the third phase because it went from the convention to spring training to now appearing on the video board and getting tours of the facilities and back where he is. A place he's familiar with, but has changed a lot since his last time there, 21 years ago. I love the picture they've tweeted out on him and PCA on Friday after the show. We talked to PCA, and he said that they had met, and that was really neat to see because of the history that they share and how similar they are in terms of being an entertainer. I know there's a lot of controversy about Sammy, but I think the reaction implied that this was also very cathartic for Cub fans, and I think it should be looked at it that way. It's been long enough. That's my opinion. Other people we heard from on Friday don't agree. We heard from on Saturday don't agree. We interviewed Sammy on Saturday on Inside the Clubhouse, and we had talked to him about a variety of things, and he sounded like a guy who was happy to be back and looks forward to returning again. September 6th is his day. The most interesting thing he said Saturday, I asked him about the Pete Rose reinstatement and whether or not that opens the door to people like him who have been kind of barred from Cooperstown, Barry Bonds, Alex Rodriguez, guys like that. His answer was interesting. He basically thinks that there is an opening there. I don't know if people would agree. I don't know if that's really valid, but he does look at it that way, and his answer was a little bit more compelling. I was glad Sammy was back. He had a lot to say, and he was in rare form for Sammy because he was at one point he was at a loss for words.
I was pretty juiced when we heard about it, and I thought did a pretty decent job kind of explaining what he was going to do, and he did all the things that we found out that he was allegedly going to do, so we were right on it. And the broadcast, both on Cubs Radio here and on TV, I made sure I rolled on the DVR because I wanted to see it as well as hear it. And they made it out like there was a buzz. I mean, Zach started his pregame show about there being a buzz. I'm curious from fans, was there a buzz? Also, Friday was the biggest ticket day.
The biggest crowd of the season
Friday. So did more people, show up because they heard the news and grabbed the last couple of tickets that might have been lying around? Yeah, sure, like he's always good to see out there. And it seems like there is a little bit of juice with the players, but most of these players were barely born when Sammy was playing his last days with the Cubs. I mean, PCA was like 2 years old or something, right, when Sosa was done with the Cubs. So I have no problem. Also, from clips and bits and pieces, him and Tom Ricketts, lots of hugging. Lots of embracing, lots of hugging between him and Tom, which – we've been around Tom, and he hated answering questions about Sammy not being around.
Do you expect fist bumps?
Yeah, it's an interesting turn of phrase. There was a lot of juice because Sammy was there. I'm not a Sammy guy, so it's hard for me to embrace it the way you guys are. I think that he never took any accountability. I don't think he's ever... I think the lesson of Sammy is if you wait long enough, everything will be forgiven and they will bring you back and it doesn't matter. And I find the whole Pete Rose steroid guy thing weird. I mean, that was not Pete Rose, whatever. I don't want to re-legislate.
Weird in what way?
All.
Weird totally, to ask him about it or weird
no,
his
no,
answer?
No, no, fine
or?
To ask him about it. But the idea that because a guy that was gambling and barred from baseball would then not apply to a guy that was somehow applies to a guy who was doing the steroid era stuff. Should we just bring back steroids? Is that the idea? Is that, would that be great to get more homers? There seemed like there were enough from this weekend, but I'm just saying, I think those are separate sort of issues. You know, whether you're barred from baseball for gambling versus, using steroids and what that meant at the time. I think baseball needs to take more culpability about not really outlawing steroids in the fashion in which they did, but they didn't. You know what I mean? I think they benefited from it, and then they turned their back on the guys that kind of used them, which I don't think people that cheated should be rewarded. I don't know. It's a very complicated issue, but it feels like all that's happened here, there's been no culpability pointed out. There's been no apology and there's been no acknowledgement. All that's happened is time has passed. And so everybody just feels like, why, you know, it's too bad that so much time passed. I don't know. I'm not into that. I thought the steroid era was a bad thing, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. And, I'm not as celebratory as others are, but I'm not a Sammy guy, you know? So I know I'm not supposed to even mention that the reason he wasn't there is because does anybody remember how he left the team? What happened when he left and the method in which he departed? You know, there was a reason they called him Sammy, right? And I think that that's all in the past now and forgiven, so that's great.
It was not, though, if you're bringing it up. I mean, people are still...
It's not reminded forgotten. Of it.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of it.
21 years ago.
There you go. All right, we got your calls. We got some people who want to check in. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Leading up to the break. There's a swing and a foul back out of play. No, I'm sorry, it stayed in the field of play. And that ball is going to be caught at third by Mastroboni, and that ends the ball game. Cubs do not score in the ninth inning. The final, Seattle 14 and the Cubs 6.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, what happened over the weekend and what? Losing a series against the team that you really feel like they should beat.
Yeah, the Mariners, you should win that series at home. But the Cubs lose the series in what amounted to basically 3 days of home run derby. That was
home run derby.
Nine more homers yesterday.
It was crazy.
That is crazy. But then you look at when something happens for the first time at Wrigley Field, it gets your attention. And with Sunday's total, it was the first time in Wrigley Field history there have been more than six or more homers combined by the Cubs and their opponents in four straight games. So that tells you we made such a big deal last year when Wrigley Field was playing as big as it was and you couldn't hit the ball out for conditions and all those things. What now? What happened? I mean, this is what the myth is always about, the wind blowing out and you can hit it out of that ballpark anytime. And this is the first time in history you've seen this kind of binge.
Let's try Kevin. Kevin is in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Tons of good points already this morning. So a couple. Am I panicked? No. But am I a realist? Yes. Over the next week, the Brewers play the Pirates and the Colorado Rockies. And the Cubs have a brutal seven-game series. So you can't just assume things are going to get better. And like you guys said earlier, Jed has some work to do. I think the one thing we found out this weekend, and the Cubs, we keep seeing these stats, their bullpen is number one in baseball since this date and that date. A lot of that has to do with the fact that the park had been playing huge. This weekend, it played like the old Wrigley, and this bullpen do not miss bats. Palencia misses bats, and Keller misses bats. Everyone else pitches to rocket-hard contact, but we have awesome defense with the exception of our right fielder yesterday. The other thing is Kyle Tucker doesn't play enough right field recently, and he might be banged up. We can ask Bruce. Way too much, to David's point, Vidal Bruhan. Now, about Matt Shaw. I was someone who panicked about PCA. I could not possibly have been more wrong. But here's the Matt Shaw question. If you're trying to win the World Series this year, he has the worst contact, the weakest contact of any third baseman in the league. He's not hitting the ball hard, and he's not going to right anymore. So here's the question. If you want to win the World Series this year, if that's the exercise, Jed has to do something. I'm not saying he's a bust. He'll probably still end up being great. But right now, dude is lost. He can't hit. He's great at defense, but don't think that the Brewers or the Cardinals are going away. And if we go 3-4 this week, I'll be happy. Thanks, guys.
Interesting comments. Matt Shaw especially. I go back and forth. I understand the concern. He does need to go to right field more than he has. It's been a tough week. He was 1-for-3 yesterday. He sat on Saturday, I think, because of the pitching matchup. But if they went out and got an established third baseman, I think you'd understand it. But who is that established third baseman?
Right.
That's a harder question to answer. I don't know if Ryan McMahon is your answer, if I'm feeling much better about that situation or that it's automatically solved.
I don't think you say, oh, okay, World Series, that's it.
I don't think you say that.
If you get him.
The most interesting thing Kevin said, and something people need to remember, regarded the Brewers. Jacob Mizorowski is giving them a jolt. He started his career with 11 hitless innings. It's the first time that a starter has done that since 1900. This kid throws hard. You talk about missing bats. They can't see the ball. I mean, that's exaggerating. But he's Skeens-like in his debut last week. So he's not going to go anywhere. Maybe the league catches up to him. But his point about the Brewers is well taken.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. If you win 3-4 from St. Louis, aren't you delighted? He said that's what he's hoping for. I mean, you can't lose that series, but if you win that series, that would be phenomenal.
I think he said 3-4 this week.
Oh, 3-4.
I think he said that. 3-4 this week, 7 games.
So he thinks they're going to lose to the Houston. Is that it? Like that? They got.
I think he meant 3-4 to the Cardinals.
Yeah, I thought that's what he meant.
I thought he meant.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Maybe you can call back and clarify.
If you take 3-4 from the Cardinals,
that's huge. Yeah. Throw
you're
a parade.
Celebrating.
Yes.
You're breathing sighs of relief that are heavy.
Yes. Yes. 312-644-6767. We'll get to your phone calls next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.